You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, along with Richard Justice, who is happy enough to step in for Ian Brown this week on the podcast. We'd love to have Richard, who on a moment's notice can talk about every team across the major leagues. Richard, thanks for joining us, and we're going to talk about some good stuff here. The new Red Sox pitching coach, who used to be their bullpen catcher. That's a fascinating storyline. Alex Cora doing good things in Puerto Rico, his homeland, obviously, after what happened with the Hurricanes and everything. But let's start with the story that has dominated the offseason for not just really the Red Sox, but most of baseball, and that is J.D. Martinez and the fact that he still doesn't have a home. It still seems like Boston is the most likely destination, but who knows at this point? This could go well into February, into spring training even. We will have to wait and see. But I want to talk to you about what happens if this happens. If the Red Sox get J.D. Martinez, obviously it brings up a slew of other questions. The first one I will pose to you is, assuming he doesn't always have to play in the outfield, you would think that J.D. Martinez would like to at least play in the outfield a good amount. Would the team, I know they've said they don't want any part of this, but would the team consider moving a Jackie Bradley Jr. in order to allow J.D. Martinez more time in the outfield?
In a word, no.
There you go. I mean,
the way they look at it is we have a Gold Glove caliber player in right field in Mookie Betts, a potential Gold Glove guy in center field, and Jackie Bradley Jr. Those two guys literally, measurably, quantifiably take runs away. You cannot take them out of the lineup. And Andrew Benintendi in left field, the young guy, is very, very good. J.D. Martinez is one of the best sluggers in the game, but he's a negative as an outfielder. I thought for a while this was part of the holdup, in that when you've played the field your whole life, guys tell you that DHing is very tough. It's very tough. You sit there and you stew on it, and how do you prepare and everything. Eventually, guys do get into a routine. But for a young guy like J.D. Martinez, this is a big adjustment because you feel like you're only half a player. Obviously, it's more than this. It's a stalemate over money. They've offered five years at something like $125. And he wants six. This deal's going to get done. I don't see a way this doesn't get done. This is his best offer. The one thing we've seen over this offseason is that these teams, with their data books and their spreadsheets, are reluctant to go long term on 30-something players. The Red Sox are doing this for J.D. Martinez. He, in effect, is an outlier in a tough market. So, The thing about free agency is you don't have to wonder what your value is. The market tells you what your value is. And 5 years, $125 appears to be the market for J.D. And I just can't imagine he would not take this before the start of spring training. But stranger things have happened.
I wonder if the Lorenzo Cain deal, the fact that Lorenzo Cain got 5 years and is an older player, maybe pushes the Red Sox to give J.D. a sixth year. We'll have to see. Obviously, right now they're standing strong on that. All right, so that brings up the other question. If they're not going to deal one of those great outfielders, and I agree, you'd be the old slogan, I think, is cutting off your nose to spite your face, right, by adding J.D. Martinez to an outfield and losing that prevention factor. But then you have Hanley Ramirez, who by all accounts has had a great offseason and is healthy. And you have Mitch Moreland in the mix as well, who they brought back to play first base. Moreland obviously is a great first baseman defensively, so Hanley becomes most of the time a DH. But if JD's DHing, where does Hanley sit?
The answer you would think would be you would have a platoon at first base,
right,
with Moreland, except that Hanley has these weird splits. He's a right-handed hitter. Moreland is a left-handed hitter. He actually is better against right-handed pitching than left-handed pitching. So I don't know what you do with that. I would think that Hanley is in a year where it's his last guaranteed year. He has a vesting option. That at some point you may have to make a tough decision on Hanley. You know, and this Hanley's had a great offseason. It's true, but Hanley, and he has a great relationship with Dave Dombrowski, and I guarantee he's going to like playing for Alex Cora. I think you have to go to camp and figure it out. But the Mitch Moreland signing was an indication of two things. One, we are prepared to move on from Hanley. And if we have to, we can go to camp and play right now because we're not, at the time of that signing, as you mentioned, you know, things could change with the Kane contract. But at that signing, we're not going to go any farther on J.D. Martinez. I just think this is going to have to be something Alex Cora is going to have to look at, and I would guess that Hanley Ramirez will be the guy that loses the at-bats, because in Mitch Moreland, you know, you have run prevention, and you have a guy that had a really good offensive year. I don't know how a platoon works there, but it's better than not having enough good players.
Obviously, depth is a good thing, and actually missing at-bats for Hanley could help the Red Sox in the long run, because I would think the last thing they really want is for him to reach those goals, which I think are at-bat-based,
right,
and have a contract for next year, because I think they'd like to see this deal end and have Hanley move on and not reach that at-bat plateau. So certainly interesting. Alex Cora is a guy you've gotten to know very well. I know Richard down in Houston, his time as the bench coach with the Astros over the last year. He's doing some good things, not just in Boston, but in his homeland of Puerto Rico. He's going to be joined by Chris Sale, Christian Vasquez this week. They're going to go on a delivery supply type mission type thing to Puerto Rico to help out. Obviously, that area still devastated by the hurricane, on its way back, but still in need of help. He's going to make one stop to his hometown, which makes a whole lot of sense. And this works right in with the Red Sox, because they have a whole partnership with JetBlue and an initiative to help out. So it's a good story. And Alex Cora kind of showing what he can do, not in baseball, but away from the game to help others.
You know, what a weird season it was for Alex Cora. He was the bench coach for the best team in baseball, the team that won the World Series. And that was, and you could tell, being around these guys, the relationship he had with George Springer and Carlos Correa, he loved it. And the hole in his resume had been, you haven't been on a bench. You've been at ESPN, you've been a player, everybody loves you, but you need this final line to your resume, bench coach. And we're probably not going to hire you until you get that final line. He got that final line. But down the stretch, after the hurricane ravaged his home country of Puerto Rico, this was one tortured man. You would see him, and he would show he was staying in constant contact with his brother Joey, who went down there, with his parents, who he and Joey flew back. They went and lived for a while in Pittsburgh with Joey's family. But you know how that is. That's not where they wanted to be. And no matter the devastation of Puerto Rico, they wanted to be back home, and they eventually took them back home, flew them back home. And he would tell stories every day, 70% of the country without power, 40% without drinking water. The roads are closed here, there. And he was so frustrated that things weren't getting done, and he was so proud that the Astros flew planes of supplies down there, that Carlos Beltran did an endless amount of work. He had tears in his eyes one day. He comes up to me during the World Series, and he goes, Yadier Molina is up in the mountains, knee-deep in mud, helping people. He goes, that's what my country means to my countrymen. And so he had a lot going on. The World Series is over. The victory parade, introduced his manager, the Red Sox, all of that stuff. But his heart was back in Puerto Rico. And I can speak for him and tell you, he could not be more grateful that JetBlue, that the Red Sox are giving time and money to help the country get back on its feet. Because I think one of the things he's realized is there's only so much the government can do. And eventually it comes down to private enterprise. And Major League Baseball has stepped up in a huge way. I know this is going to be an emotional day for him, an emotional week for him to be back down there. The last time I talked to him, the country is making progress. More than 50% of the people have power, but there's a lot of work to do. But this has been a heart-ripping episode for him.
Yeah, great, great stuff from you, Richard, there. One more thing I wanted to touch on with you. Dana Lavangi getting rave reviews already, and we're not even at spring training yet. Of course, he's the new pitching coach for the Boston Red Sox. Rick Porcello's been the latest guy to say that he's gotten to talk to him on the phone a couple times, and he is super excited. Joe Kelly and Craig Kimbrell already working on some stuff that they've talked to Lavangi about. Now, obviously, this is a guy, he's no stranger to these pitchers. He was the bullpen catcher for the Red Sox. It's fascinating to make that move. I don't know what the exact percentage is, Richard, but the vast majority of pitching coaches were pitchers. But this is a situation where he wasn't, and it seems to be he's on his way to being a good one.
You know, he's 27 years in the Red Sox organization as a player, a bullpen catcher, a scout, and then a bullpen coach. But the bullpen coach position has evolved over the years. Once it was just a guy go down there with a glove and let ex Justin Verlander do his side throwing and all that. It's way more than that. It's an extension of the pitching coach now. And the Red Sox pitchers would tell you they had such a close relationship with Dana that a big percentage of problems being diagnosed with mechanics over the last years came from a suggestion from Dana. And the other side of this is that Alex Cora knew Dana when he played there and had a high opinion of him. And I don't know if somebody recommended him or it was just Alex's idea. But it's an unusual hire, and you're right. One of the first things he did was have a call Chris Sale and had an hour-long conversation. And Chris Sale said it was emotional to hear him and to understand, to get a grasp for how involved he is in ours, how much he cares in our careers, our lives, how much he cares, how into it he is. And, you know, he's a guy I got credit for helping straighten out Clay Buchholz and all of that. When Dana was named the interim bench coach beside Torey Lovullo when John Farrell had cancer, was undergoing cancer treatment, Cora tweeted, "Dana belongs in the dugout. Too much knowledge and pays attention to details." So when when Alex got a chance to back up his words with action, he did that. So, you know, this game now, there's mountains of information and data, but this game is about relationships. And Dana is a guy that all those guys, Porcello, they all know Dana has their back, and Alex understands the influence he has on these guys. It's a cool story and a great hire.
Yeah, it's going to be a cool story to follow, too, through spring training and the whole season. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Red Sox edition. For Richard Justice, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.